Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
If you look at my body, you have seen videos. No one in his right sense of mind can even think that I tortured myself or I inflicted such harm on me. So I pity people who have such kind of thinking, you know.
A Ugandan satirist and government critic flees into exile.
Talks with other people that lost, who ran with him. We are one party, and he has actually invited everybody and requested them one thing which is important is ABC, which is bigger than all of us. Those were his words.
Lesotho Prime Minister Moeketsi Majoro resigns as deputy leader of the ruling All Basotho Convention, or ABC.
Our constituency is Zambia. If the Americans want to engage with us, we are available. But if they think that they don't owe us an explanation and therefore they don't want to meet with us, so be it.
And the leader of the Zambian main opposition party, Patriotic Front, or PF, refuses to meet representatives of the U.S. Embassy. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Ugandan satirist and government critic says he went into self-imposed exile to seek medical attention following injuries he sustained while being detained by state security operatives. Kakwenza Rukerebashaija, who recently received bail after weeks of detention, says he was tortured and has scars all over his body as proof, a claim supporters of the government sharply deny. He was arrested on December 28 and charged with offensive communication under the Computer Misuse Act. This for using offensive language to criticize President Yoweri Museveni and his son, Lieutenant General Muhoozi Kainerugaba, a commander of land forces. In part one of my interview with Rukerebashaija, he talks about why he says it was necessary for him to flee Uganda to seek medical attention abroad.
The reason why I've left Uganda is very obvious, because of political persecution. When I was released from prison, I was very sick. And when I went to the hospital, I was referred to Germany for proper medical attention. But court refused to give me back my passport. It confiscated my passport as a condition for giving me bail. So I value my life. I have to run away and look for medication. But definitely, after I have gotten the medication that I want, I'll return back to Uganda and I'll use the international airport, Entebbe. And there is no doubt I'll come back. I am not going anywhere.
Some people are suggesting that not attending the court by leaving the country to seek medical attention will complicate your court case. How do you respond to that?
First of all, I've been subjected to procedural injustice. There has been a miscarriage of justice in my case. I was detained for 14 days. The military, the SFC, shirked court orders to bring me to court, the writ of habeas corpus. Two court orders, they refused to bring me to court. So when I was brought to court, tortured, almost dying, could not even walk, the magistrate, instead of observing my rights in accordance with the law, instead he sent me to prison. That was very bad. Our laws are very clear, especially the Human Rights Act, Anti-Torture Act. You know, if someone is brought to court when they are tortured, the magistrate has an obligation to send that person to hospital, not to prison. But the magistrate whittled down my prayer for bail. He could not even listen to me and instead sent me to bail. That was not enough. Even when I came out of prison, and I went to the hospital and I presented to him a thorough medical report that suggested that I should go out for medical treatment, he whittled it down and refused to give me back my passport. So as a human being, I have to value my life. I value my life. I had to escape to go and look for medical attention. That is understandable. It is a necessity. So if he cannot use his head to think that I am a human being and I value my life and I am a law-abiding citizen, he should understand that what he did was very inconsiderate. So I have no apologies. I have to come back. Whatever case they impose on me or they prefer against me, I will handle them.
Kakweza, on social media, where you are very prominent since your release, has been awash with both criticism and praise. Some people praise you for being bold by calling out the president and his son. Others are saying that was reckless and that the alleged torture that you are claiming did not happen. What is your response to that?
They arrested me when I was very fine. They took me, they tortured me to almost death. My ankles, they have fractures. My whole body is full of dermatological ulcerations. when I was sent to prison, they sent a doctor who came and examined me and gave a report. And that report is available of torture. The Human Rights Commission came to prison and visited me and also confirmed torture. When I came out of prison, the medical report confirms torture. If you look at my body, you have seen videos. No one in his right sense of mind can even think that I tortured myself or I inflicted such harm on me. So I pity people who have such kind of thinking, you know.
Kakweza Rukirabashaija is a Ugandan satirist and government critic. He spoke with me from an undisclosed location. Meanwhile, Uganda has rejected a ruling from the UN International Court of Justice ordering it to pay war reparations to the Democratic Republic of Congo. Analysts say Uganda could have avoided a $325 million fine if it had agreed to mediation. In a statement, Uganda's Minister for Foreign Affairs described the ICJ ruling as unfair and wrong. On Wednesday, the UN court ordered that Uganda pay the DRC for damages to people, property and resources inflicted during Uganda's invasion of the country's Ituri province in the late 1990s during the Second Congo War. For analysis, I reach Herbert Kabasu Babu Katulondi, a former governor of Kasai in the DRC, who is also the author of the recently published book, U.S. Marines in the Congo-Benin War.
Well, I've been talking about the concept of inter-African imperialism, and Uganda epitomizes this situation because Uganda has been considering Eastern Congo as some kind of a field or forest where they can go and plunder. So Uganda has been enlisting military delinquent who wreaked havoc in Kisangani in 2001, and I think also in Ituri in 2005. And this is the second situation where, now this time I think it's the UN court. This one is the UN court that has compelled Uganda to pay $325 million to the Congo.
Do you see Kampala paying this money?
No, with this incompetent, impotent regime of Mr. Tshisekedi, they are not going to do anything because, in the first place, Uganda was compelled by an international court of justice to pay $10 billion US dollars to the Congo in 2005. And Mr. Tshisekedi has not done anything to exert influence on Uganda to pay, or nor has any international body made any pressure on Uganda to pay that amount of money. And I don't think Uganda is going to pay these $325 million US dollars to the Congolese government. Uganda is more interested. Uganda doesn't care until such time that there will be an international institution or organization that will exert tremendous pressure on Uganda to pay that money. They will not pay. On the contrary, they will be defiant and they will continue to plunder the Congo.
But to be fair, President Tshisekedi's administration was not in power when the ruling that you talked about, former President Kabila, who was there. So why would you hold him accountable for something that did not happen under his watch?
Because in the first place, it is Mr. Kabila's government and their Minister of Justice, Thabo Mwamba, when he was Minister of Justice, they worked with a Congolese lawyer, Kalala Chibangu. I remember even Kalala Chibangu was arrested because the the Congolese government wanted him to relinquish the document so that they can continue to pursue Uganda. And Uganda was arrogant, and there was no pressure. There was no influence, international influence, to compel Uganda to pay. In fact, Uganda couldn't even pay because that money is almost half the GDP of Uganda. So then Mr. Kabila left because the prosecution, the action to come to the International Court of Justice was initiated by the Kabila government. So, and their president Tshisekedi, for the last 3 years, he has done anything to compel to get Uganda to pay. On the contrary, while Uganda is still having this situation, obligation to pay money, President Tshisekedi allowed them to come back again.
This ruling comes as relations between Kinshasa and Kampala appears to be going very well, to the extent that President Tshisekedi called on the UPDF to join, and they have launched a joint military offensive against the ADF rebels in Congo.
President Tshisekedi, in the very first place, the neighboring country that has destroyed your country, that has been compelled by an international body of justice to pay $10 billion, meaning that that international body found that country, Uganda, guilty of the things for which they want them to pay. In the first place, you shouldn't have gone to the Ugandan. That's why most people consider that it's treason. And now the UN is bringing a second tremendous proof to show that Ugandans engage in predation in the Congo. So because they found them guilty. So in the very first place, Mr. Tshisekedi didn't have to call them in the very first place. In fact, Mr. Tshisekedi should have come should have displayed political ingenuity in getting the UN, I mean the MONUSCO that is there, the FIB, the International the Force Intervention Brigade, comprising Tanzania, South Africa, and other countries. Mr. Tshisekedi should have sat with MONUSCO and South African military delegate, Tanzanian military delegate, and Kenyans to say, how do we give a new orientation to the tactics on the ground to overwhelm these ADF. These ADF are just third world poor so-called terrorists. They are not Boko Haram. They don't have missiles. They don't have grenade launchers.
Herbert Kabasu Babu Katolondi is a former governor of Kasai in the DRC, who is also the author of the recently published book, U.S. Marines in the Congo-Beni War. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. The political pressure group Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law is calling for a thorough investigation into allegations that independent marketeers are hoarding fuel. The move, the group says, is a burden on Nigerians. If the allegations are proven to be true, the group wants those responsible to be prosecuted under the full force of the law. Their demands come after the government said there is enough fuel for Nigerians. Deji Adeyanju is the convener for Concern Nigeria. He tells me that no person or group should be able to profit at the detriment of ordinary Nigerians.
We go to the Minister for State for Petroleum over the persistent fuel scarcity in many major towns, you know, in the country, Abuja, Lagos, Kano, and many parts of the country. And we noticed that this fuel scarcity is artificially created by the independent marketers in the country because there are fuel products available, but they just refuse to sell. Or in some places where they sell for a few hours. And they are the regulatory agency for the country. And it seems that the NNPC is standing akimbo, folding its hands, and refusing to act. So we see the complexity of NNPC in all of this, and that is why we have written a letter that this act going on is an act of sabotage, economic sabotage, and it's a crime under Nigerian law. And we are wondering why will the ministry not be concerned about addressing this issue. So that was the basis for us writing to the minister and the GMB of NNPC and the CEO of the upstream.
Well, Deji, some Nigerians I have spoken with are also calling for an independent investigation into some of these, what you described as artificial shortages. What is the stance of your organization on that?
Yes, the position of NNPC is that there is sufficient oil.
However, now revelations of investigation have now revealed that one of the major importers of petrol into the country had brought in substandard products into the country, and that the products were diluted, and that as a result, this was why NNPC is withdrawing that particular product from the market. You know, Nigeria should not be made to suffer for that economic sabotage, because if it is true that that is what has happened, then it means there is a deliberate act, and that this person should be prosecuted, you know, or this company should be made to feel the consequences of that act, because such things should not be permitted or allowed.
Critics are suggesting that the prosecution or perhaps the investigation being called for might not happen because some of these independent marketeers are either in league with the regulators or have godfathers, so to speak, in high political offices.
Absolutely. Yes, for how long will we continue to do these games year in, year out? That's what many Nigerians are asking, that should the interest of a few people, a few cabal in the oil sector, to pursue that of 220 million people? Definitely, the answer is definitely no. You know, and this is why, as a people, as a government, we must show to the Nigerian people and to the rest of the world that we are capable of managing our affairs, because the rest of the world is watching. You know, we cannot be so rich in natural resources, petroleum included, and we cannot manage even that. You know, how do you give room for such a situation where a particular marketer will go and bring adulterated products to the country, and the whole country will now be at risk of sin, and we will now say that, oh, that person will not be held accountable, he will continue to do business with NNPC, and it will be business as usual if nothing happens. You know, so such things should not be condoned. You know, the NNPC and its subsidiaries should wake up to their responsibility.
Deji, what do you say to those who are of the opinion that this so-called artificial shortage has been practiced in Nigeria for a long time? So why now that you're calling for an independent investigation into such act?
Yes. You see, we are all witnessing in this country that every time artificial scarcity of petrol has been created, it was done because some critical actors wanted to make sure, and it's always in collusion with the government, they wanted to make sure that the artificial scarcity is created so that they can increase price of petrol. And you know, there have been rumors left, right, and center about plans to increase price of petrol. So is that the situation is that of a rich crying yesterday and a child died this morning? So many people are not shocked and surprised by these underhand tactics by critical stakeholders in the oil sector. So it is just something that both the critical stakeholders and the energy marketers, the game that both of them are playing. So that's what we see
play now. Deji Adeyanju is the convener for Concern Nigeria. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. In Lesotho, Prime Minister Moeketsi Majoro has resigned as deputy leader of the ruling All Basotho Convention, or ABC. This after losing to Nkaku Kapi in a contest to decide the leader of the party. It comes as the ABC organized its congress to choose a new leader ahead of the much-anticipated September general election. Party officials say they needed to organize the internal party poll early enough to allow it ample time to fully prepare for the campaign for the kingdom's general election. Kapi's election victory means he will become Lesotho's next prime minister if the ABC wins enough seats in parliament to form a coalition. For the latest development, I reach the party's general secretary, Lebohang Klaile.
He actually contested to be a leader. Now he lost that. And I think he took a decision to step down because maybe he thought that members of ABC don't have confidence in him to run the party or to lead them.
Why do you think he lost that position? Because I thought he had a groundswell of support from the NEC as well as people who made decisions in the party, and that he was charting a good course.
No, he was not popular. He's not popular. And we had three members who are members of the NEC who were running. And the NEC supported them, all of the three of them. And one was in the working committee of the NEC. So four of them ran a good course, and unfortunately, one won and the rest lost.
Does that mean that if your party wins and is able to form a coalition in the upcoming elections in September, the one who won will be chosen as the next prime minister of the Kingdom of Lesotho?
That is definite. He is the leader of the party, and therefore he will lead the government.
But do you think that the new person will have what it takes that will draw people to vote for the ABC in the upcoming elections?
He has already attracted people. People who defected, some are coming back, and some are promising to come back. And we are confident that he is able and he is competent to attract members to join our party.
What makes you so confident?
I know him. He's a member of the NEC. I've been working with him for now 2 years, from 2019. I know his capabilities. I know his weaknesses. Hence, I'm saying I'm confident that he has capabilities to attract people to join or to come back to the party.
So why do you think the outgoing prime minister became unpopular?
I think it was because of him not being able to work with the National Executive Committee of the ABC that deployed him to a position of premiership.
Some people think that there has to be a compromise within the party. So if the party backed him up to become the prime minister, why wouldn't the NEC find a compromise to work with him?
We did found a compromise by co-opting him into the NEC. Remember, he was not elected. He lost in the conference of 2019, and Professor Mahau became the deputy leader. When Professor Mahau left last year to form his own party, we co-opted him for one reason, which was very good, to say we want to know what is happening in government, and you should actually get mandate also from the NEC, which has deployed you to a premiership position. So that was a huge compromise that we made against the will of members of ABC.
What do you think are the prospects of the party in the upcoming elections, particularly with a new leadership?
He is a unifier. He accommodates everybody, regardless of previous positions that people took. When we were heading for leadership conference, he is actually accommodating everybody. And that is a strength for him. And that is a way that we are saying this man, he is having qualities to bring together our party. With his humility, we are honestly confident that this is a man of the people and a man who doesn't say or have grudges against anybody. He talks with the prime minister. He talks with other people that lost, who ran with him. We are one party, and he has actually invited everybody and requested them. One thing which is important is ABC, which is bigger than all of us. Those were his words.
Lebohang Khraile is the Secretary General of the Lesotho Ruling or Basotho Convention, or ABC. He spoke with me from the capital, Maseru.
Hello, this is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in Zambia, the leader of the main opposition Patriotic Front, or PF, has refused to meet representatives of the U.S. Embassy in the capital, Lusaka. In a press release, Given Lubinda says he turned down a meeting request from two officials, the embassy's U.S. political unit chief, Madam Alexandria, and political specialist David Chibanda, because they have not yet replied to his protest letter. It was sent in response to the U.S. government's criticism that the previous Zambian government was corrupt. Lubinda tells me that the opposition party and its representatives will refuse to meet U.S. embassy officials until he receives a response.
I am a very courteous person. I'm a very honest person. And for the time being, I'm leading a party of men and women who are courteous and who are honest. I looked in the eyes of the two representatives of Joe Biden, and I realized that if I continued with that meeting without clearing the issues that are raised in my letter to them in September, I would be a hypocrite, and I don't like to be hypocritical. So I asked them to go back to respond to my letter before I can meet with them, so that I understand the basis on which Joe Biden said the harsh words that he said against us.
What were the major issues, if you could list them, the reason why you wrote that letter and for which you said has not been responded to, for which this meeting was turned down?
Any head of state can appreciate the successful elections of another sovereign state, but no head of state has the liberty to celebrate the victory of a particular political party over any other political party in a state to which they don't belong. They have no right. And not even Joe Biden has the right. He has no right whatsoever to go to the General Assembly of the United Nations to go and celebrate the victory of a particular political party that took part in an election in a sovereign state such as Zambia. For him to go to the extent of calling the party that lost election a corrupt regime, I take serious exception to that. But I thought that President Biden may have been misinformed by his representatives in Lusaka. That was the reason why, with all humility and all courtesy, I wrote to Biden's representatives in Lusaka for them to explain what kind of information they have given to the American head of state.
But Mr. Lubinda, the international community also praised the way Zambians comported themselves during the election process. Doesn't that count at all?
Yes. People have the authority to congratulate the country for the manner in which they conduct their election. As a matter of fact, President Joe Biden was expected to end up saying, "Well done, President Edgar Chagwa Lungu," unlike my predecessor, who did not concede. President Edgar Lungu conceded without a fight. President Biden's predecessor caused death at Capitol Hill. How could he possibly make Zambia appear to be less democratic than in the United States of America? How?
Has the meeting been postponed to a later date until the letter that you sent to the representative in Lusaka is responded to or replied to before a meeting could be rescheduled?
I'm sure that any person who values relations will say to you that in mutual respect, you answer to colleagues' questions before you pose your own question. We pose the question to our friends. There is no way that I can make myself available to them to answer their questions before they answer mine. That is the relationship that Africa got rid of. Zambia got rid of that relationship in 1964, the relationship of horse and rider. And my political party shall not be treated as a horse. That we ask the Americans to explain something that is not clear to us. They take their sweet time, they don't explain, and then they think that we can go and have dinner and smile to each other. No. As for the way forward, you asked, was this meeting postponed? To be honest with you, for us in the Patriotic Front, our constituency is Zambia. If the Americans want to engage with us, we are available. But if they think that they don't owe us an explanation and therefore they don't want to meet with us, so be it.
Given Lubinda is the leader of the main opposition Patriotic Front, or PF. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. Meanwhile, in Zambia, a consortium of healthcare professional associations says they will no longer volunteer their services unless the government employs members by February 18. The consortium, which comprises 12 healthcare professionals, says attempts to meet representatives of the government to address their demands have not yielded positive results. The ultimatum comes as the Southern African country battles the coronavirus and vaccine apathy. Critics, however, say this is not the time for doctors and their health professionals to refuse to volunteer to help save lives. They contend that the consortium members should give the recently installed government time to improve the economy battered by the pandemic. Dr. Brian Sampa is the chairperson of the Consortium of Healthcare Professionals. He tells me that his group decided to issue the ultimatum as a last resort, adding that representatives of the government appear unwilling to meet their demands.
I am a very courteous person, I'm a very honest person, and for the time being I'm leading a party of men and women who are courteous and who are honest. I looked in the eyes of the two representatives of Joe Biden, and I realized that if I continued with that meeting without clearing the issues that are raised in my letter to them in September, I would be a hypocrite. And I don't like to be hypocritical. So I asked them to go back to respond to my letter before I can meet with them, so that I understand the basis on which Joe Biden said the harsh words that he said against us.
What were the major issues, if you could list them, the reason why you wrote that letter and for which you said has not been responded to, for which this meeting was turned down?
Any head of state can appreciate the successful elections of another sovereign state, but no head of state has the liberty to celebrate the victory of a particular political party over any other political party in a state to which they don't belong. They have no right. And not even Joe Biden has the right. He has no right whatsoever to go to the General Assembly of the United Nations to go and celebrate the victory of a particular political party that took part in an election in a sovereign state such as Zambia. For him to go to the extent of calling the party that lost the election a corrupt regime, I take serious exception to that. But I thought that President Biden may have been misinformed by his representatives in Lusaka. That was the reason why, with all humility and all courtesy, I wrote to Biden's representatives in Lusaka for them to explain what kind of information they had given to the American head of state.
But Mr. Lubinda, the international community also praised the way Zambians comported themselves during the election process. Doesn't that count at all?
Yes. People have the authority to congratulate the country for the manner in which they conduct their election. As a matter of fact, President Joe Biden was expected to end up saying, "Well done, President Edgar Chagwa Lungu," unlike my predecessor, who did not concede. President Edgar Lungu conceded without a fight. President Biden's predecessor caused death at Capitol Hill. How could he possibly make Zambia appear to be less democratic than in the United States of America? How?
Has the meeting been postponed to a later date until the letter that you sent to the representative in Lusaka is responded to or replied to before a meeting could be rescheduled?
I'm sure that any person who values relations will say to you that in mutual respect, you answer to colleagues' questions before you pose your own question. We pose the question to our friends. There is no way that I can make myself available to them to answer their questions before they answer mine. That is the relationship that Africa got rid of. Zambia got rid of that relationship in 1964, the relationship of horse and rider. And my political party shall not be treated as a horse. That we ask the Americans to explain something that is not clear to us. They take their sweet time, they don't explain, and then they think that we can go and have dinner and smile to each other. No. As for the way forward, you asked, was this meeting postponed? To be honest with you, for us in the Patriotic Front, our constituency is Zambia. If the Americans want to engage with us, we are available. But if they think that they don't owe us an explanation and therefore they don't want to meet with us, so be it.
Dr. Brian Sampa is the chairperson of the Consortium of Healthcare Professionals. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In Malawi, organizers of recent nationwide demonstrations say they are suspending mass protests to allow the government time to address their demands. Bon Kalindu, an influential comedian and lead organizer of the demonstration, says the suspension will also allow the administration to help victims of Tropical Cyclone Ana. Displeased with the direction of the country, the protesters demanded that President Lazarus Chakwera keep his promises, which he made to voters in the recent general election. The promises include creating 1 million jobs and providing free water and electricity connections. To learn more about the decision to suspend the demonstrations, I reached Bon Kalindo in the Malawian capital, Lilongwe.
I can confirm to you that concerned the citizens who have been holding demonstrations across the country, Malawi. We have suspended all the planned demonstrations. Number one is to give ourselves time to go and appreciate the damage that has been caused by Cyclone Ana. It is not Malawian where our people, fellow Malawians, are mourning and we go ahead with the demonstrations. It is not in order. So we want to go, our focus is we want to go and be with them in this trying time, because a lot of people in Malawi have lost their relations and property. So instead of going ahead with our demos this time in a different manner, where this time around we'll go and, you know, cheer those that have lost their relatives and property.
I understand one of the reasons also is that you think the president is addressing some of the issues you raised in your petition for which you organized these demonstrations. Is this the case?
Yeah, you remember when we started, demonstrations, it was at the same time that you also presented petitions after, thorough consultation. We have observed that government has started, implementing or looking into or taking heed of our concerns. For example, the toll gate fees that were so exorbitant, the government, tried to, look at them and reduce the fees, though not to our satisfactory, but at least they have reduced the toll gate fees. The other issue was to do with the amnesty, where government wanted those that, stole government money, public money, to go scot-free without being arrested. So this has been reversed by the president after our press conference and after our demonstrations. And again, the issue of Honorable Kelvin Sugwa, who was arrested by the Anti-Corruption Bureau, but some people wanted to shield him. And when we got angry, and the president then has, has dropped him, and at the same time he has also reshuffled the cabinet.
Some people are saying, talking about the reshuffling of cabinet, that he kept more than 70% of the previous members of advisors in his cabinet. What is your take on the latest development of him reconstituting his cabinet?
What is important most is that the president has reshuffled the cabinet, and whether it's going to be, whether the candidates or the ministers are not qualifying, then you will see after crossing the bridge. But this time, we want to thank him for reshuffling the cabinet. He has done that after we requested him to do so. But yes, while we agree, we should also give them a benefit of doubt whether they are going to perform or not, because most of them did not perform the last time. They did not perform well. So, yes, we can agree and disagree at the same time, but most importantly, he has reshuffled the cabinet.
Well, some people are suggesting that you decided to suspend all protests because you appear to have been motivated by fear of frequent arrests by the police.
I was born a fearless man. He did not hear from Malawi that I have been hospitalized because of BP and the like. I was born a strong man and I'm not even fearing anything. And at the same time, there's no one who can, you know, give me money, you know, to say, Bonnie, stop doing the demos. No, no, no. That's something that I cannot do. So, you know, people are there to speculate. You know, in a democracy like Malawi, you expect such things. When you try to do a good thing, you know, people, you know, take it in another direction. So I am not surprised when people are, you know, are stating the way they want. They are stating to say, I'm fearing the arrest, blah, blah, blah. I am not worried, provided I know the truth, that we have suspended all the planned demonstrations just to attend to the issues of Cyclone Anna, and also giving each other administration time to look into the remaining issues, because this is not a war.
Bon Kalindo is an influential comedian and lead organizer of the demonstrations. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Mr. LG.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Bill Eagle and producer Saeed Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, before you ask a man for clothes, look at the clothes he is wearing. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.